This is the Elevate Podcast, where we have conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul. I'm Amanda Noga. I'm a yoga and Ayurveda practitioner, and each week I'm joined by my co-host, holistic health coach, Sarah Hopkins. So let's dive in to this week's episode.
Welcome back to the Elevate Podcast, my friends. Welcome to 2022. Hello, Sarah Hopkins.
Hello.
I have just joined the podcast. I'm so happy that we're back. We've had a little teeny tiny break, but I feel like a lot has transpired in those few weeks. And yeah, we're now on the other side of the new year. And today we are going to talk about soulpreneurship, meaning working for yourself, doing what you love, following your passion, all of that sort of stuff. And since both Sarah and I have been working for ourselves for, I would say, the good part of 15 years or so, maybe 10 to 15 years, we have quite a bit to say on the topic. And I think now in 2022, such a strange year to say, but I feel like more than ever people are feeling the call to do what they really feel called to do. You know, they're following their soul purpose, and as we know, this is the time of the big quit, as they're calling it, mass resignation from corporate Australia and corporate America. So I think it's a really interesting time for anyone that's considering starting to work for themselves, or I'm sure a lot of our listeners here are already on that path. So anyway, before we get stuck into the nitty-gritty of what it is like to really work for yourself or work for what you love, how has the first few weeks of your year been, Sarah Hopkins? Oh, and have you landed on a word of the year?
Oh, my gosh.
Word for the year?
I think that I did have one, which I totally can't
Your goldfish brain has forgotten your word for the year.
Well, I and think it's like day 12. Yeah, I think that the last things have been pretty intense here. Which we'll get into in a second. So I think it's sort of potentially made me.
Does it feel irrelevant?
I think my word, which actually it doesn't feel irrelevant. Should we save our words for the end, or should we do them now?
No, tell me now.
I think my word. I think the word that I was going to say, and I guess, you know, we could maybe break it down in the context of what's happened, was authenticity. Yeah, because I guess, you know, more than ever, I want to be unapologetically myself and stand within, you know, my values and, you know, be, you know, just be authentic and be honest. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's going, that our capacity to stay, and I'll give context to this in a minute when we break down Perth news, that capacity to stay in your authentic truth is going to be the biggest, most challenging thing to deal with on a daily basis in Perth this year, definitely.
Okay, so can you detail what is going on down there?
And then we'll talk about your word of the year. But yes, so I don't remember what was happening before Christmas, but obviously things have been getting increasingly more stressful. Oh, I think we'd had some COVID out in the community and some mask wearing and stuff like that. And there was, you know, talk of mandates, but nothing had been confirmed. Excuse me. And only yesterday, Mark McGowan has come out with the it's basically, I mean, look, a lot of people are shocked. A lot of people are really upset. I personally am not even remotely shocked because this is what we've just seen rolled out in WA is what we've seen in many other countries around the world and also in other states. So basically proof of vaccination for entry into hospitals, aged care facilities, no surprises there. Bars, restaurants.
I've got the list here. Dining and hospitality venues, amusement parks and the zoo, theatres, museums, and, yeah, basically anything in, like, the entertainment realm, music festivals, gyms and health studios. I guess that includes yoga. Live music, nightclubs, bottle shops, pretty random. Play centres. I wonder if that includes outdoor playgrounds.
I don't think so.
Major stadiums and the casino, obviously another important venue. yeah, when I saw this list, I, like you, was not surprised because we have assumed that this would be coming sooner or later. And, yeah, it didn't really shock me. But over the last 24 hours, as I've spoken to different friends in Perth and really started to understand the different, very real ways that this is going to affect basically everybody I know, from, you know, a couple of really good friends that have very, you know, popular restaurant in Perth. They have worked, and I actually used to work there. They've dedicated their lives to this place for the last 15 years and are grappling with the prospect of having to close down. They're responsible for loads of staff, not to mention their own children, and it's just, yeah, like being backed into a corner. And I could list so many different examples, you know, friends that have yoga studios, friends that are, like you just said, an example to me, which kind of brought it home, is the idea of if your parents say, if your family says, like, oh, yeah, let's go out for dinner, meet here, having to be like, I can't come. Like, this is just...
I know.
Yeah, it's really, really shocking to think of kids being, you know, not being able to drop your kids off at school potentially. Like,
well, that's already sort of. I mean, that's already happened. Like, a lot of the private schools have already mandated the vaccines for parents, so that parents can't enter the school grounds unless they're vaccinated in a lot of the private schools. And that we can drop our children off at school now in the public school realm. But for sure, you know, I mean, this is the thing, for sure that's coming. And, you know, I will say that these mandates that Mark McGowan has formulated, endorsed, released, whatever, these are apparently the strictest mandates in Australia and probably some of the strictest in the world, of course.
Well, that's no surprise.
That's no surprise. But, I mean... Yes,
it must be illegal on some level. Like this type of across-the-board mandate, it goes against basic human rights.
It does.
And unless they have quickly changed the laws, there must be a legal, I don't know, I don't even want to say loophole because it's not I'm not thinking of a loophole. I'm not a lawyer, so obviously.
No, there are ways to it isn't, not everything is legislated, right. And some of these things are in violation of the Constitution, even the Australian Constitution, and especially the American Constitution.
Trying to say.
Yes, but the thing is that the court systems are also sympathetic to the conventional beliefs around these things. So if you, so it really comes down to the individual magistrate or judge or the judicial system. So a lot of times, you know, like in the US, there's some precedent. You can see that like university students have gone and fought against, because in the US, they did this ages ago where they mandated entry for uni students. And, you know, so a lot of the uni students already had had COVID. So they were like, I've got like immunity, I've got antibodies, like, and they were fighting against it. And the judge just, the judge was like, no, I think it's a, you know, it's a risk. It's an assessment. It's a risk assessment that I've made that the government has mandated, and overturned it and just said no. So even though there is right now not necessarily entire legislation around it, there's probably not that much legal recourse. And of course, there'll be, for some of the mandates, like the employment mandates, which we've already spoken about, which they he did last year, you know, he did get a lot of that legislated really quickly, like really passed it through and had it legislated. Yeah, and it was, and the thing is, he didn't get much pushback. So
because people are distracted and overwhelmed with other like more personally pressing issues, like am I going to have to close my yoga studio, let's say. I know a bunch of people are rallying together, like different owners of gyms and other kind of like I guess health places to kind of band together to cover legal fees. But I don't even know what we are going to see in the next 12 months. But I do want to say that in the last couple of weeks, I have, do you remember Dr. John DeMartini?
Yes. Yeah, because I recommended him in the last one, I think.
Did you?
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I recommended him about it was in the episode. I think I've done it in two recent episodes, but in the episode where we talked about a chat about everything, I said for that, because he has all the values, how to determine what your values are.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so you subconsciously got into my mind with the mention of Dr. DeMartini, and I was curious to see like what his perspective is on all of this. And as usual, he's just beautifully balanced and middle path, and really I really resonated with the way he was sharing about his perspective on the pandemic. And if you don't know Dr. DeMartini, his like main teachings, I think, are mainly, I mean, he teaches about a lot of different stuff, from like money to core values, like you said. But I feel like the core of his work is about divine polarity and understanding like the opposites of divine order. And so anyway, I've been listening to him a lot lately, and something that he was sharing that I really, really liked and just made a lot of sense to me is, at this time, obviously there's a lot of challenges that we're being faced with, but the divine order of things is that everything has an equal and opposite cause and effect, right? So wherever there is challenge, there's equal and opposite opportunity. And so with every challenge that we're presented, it's our kind of work to find what is the opportunity here? What am I being asked to do? Like, what is my highest self asking me to do in this moment? And like, where's the gold? Where's the silver lining in a way? And I think sometimes it's hard to see the silver lining when we're just being subjected to all of this stuff that feels out of our control. But at the end of the day, it is calling a lot of people, which is, I guess, a nice segue into what we're going to talk about, but calling people into their truth and bringing people together that do have, you know, the same values and the same respect. And that's, I'm not talking about like whether you're vaccine pro or vaccine free. It's beyond that. It's like, can we respect each other enough to have our individual choices and still get along and still be in relationship with one another, even if we do have different views? And yeah, it's kind of like the rubber hits the road here. All of the practices that we do, whether it be yoga or meditation, this is where all of that, yeah, practice gets put into like real life. Like, can we stay in our center? Can we see the divine order in it all? And yeah, I guess that would be, if you're feeling like you need some fresh perspective and you haven't heard him speak lately, Dr. Demartini is, I think, in my opinion, speaking in a really balanced, and not to mention, like, he's so smart. He has so much research.
He's a polymath.
And data and, like,
yeah.
He's got all the info. If you're into info, he's got that covered. And yeah. I guess from like what's important to me is he's got like a really beautiful, what feels to be very balanced perspective.
Yeah, I love him. I went to one of his workshops when he came to Perth and did it. Did like a full, I remember that, like, 3-day weekend thing. But no, okay, I'm gonna. And where can we find him? Are you just looking at his Instagram, or are you just online on his website? Where's he talking?
Looking at recent podcast interviews.
Okay.
I only listen to podcasts. That's pretty much the only thing I consume.
I will link. We'll link a couple.
I'll
in
link
the
show some
notes.
Things that I've listened to recently. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Well, so we won't labor over the mandates anymore, because no doubt it will be coming up in our catch-ups at the beginning of every podcast as it evolves.
For the rest of time.
Hopefully not for very long. But firstly, before we sort of move into solopreneurship, so to speak, what do you think your word of the year is, Mans?
So I spent quite a bit of time like kind of simmering on this, because I was really unclear as to what my focus wants to be this year. But after sitting with it and just having some stillness and some clarity, for me, my word is connected to kind of everything that I do, from like my relationships to my work stuff. And I guess like my internal like intentions. And the word is sisterhood. And so my focus this year and my energy this year is going to be deliberately directed in cultivating my relationships, as in my, you know, girlfriend friendships, online with like all of the people that I can't see, and also cultivating the friendships here in Bali with the amazing women that are here in the flesh, and also in my work stuff. So Karma Collab is, you know, front and center for me this year in terms of my work time and energy. And that's all about sisterhood. It's about supporting girls. It's about supporting women. It's supporting, you know, women that are disadvantaged, and also supporting women that are privileged and educated and empowered. So it kind of is across the board, and it feels, yeah, really good. It feels really, really fulfilling for me to be working on that and spending all my time and energy working in that space. And I guess like it's more as a philosophy or a theme, sisterhood to me is about this feminine, I guess, coming together, this coming together of feminine power and collaboration, and kind of a new way of women supporting women. I think that's a hashtag, but it's like the day, I can just see very clearly that the days of women competing with one another is over, and it's time for us to collaborate. And I think one of the really key ways that we're going to get out of this COVID stuff is through the power of women and women's stories and women's voices being heard and elevating one another. So I really believe in the power of sisterhood. So
love it.
Just, yeah, it's just the beginning. It's just January. So we'll see how this word unfolds. I feel like whenever you choose a word for the year, then it becomes like something almost that you're like tested on. Have you had that? Have you had that thing happen before?
Well, I've never chosen a word before, but I think I like the idea of doing it because I think that it gives you like a little tiny guidepost. Like if you can be cognizant of your word and you've like given some thought and intention to the word, then you can use it really simply. Like, am I being authentic in this moment? Like I can just pull in like what is my authenticity level right now? Or like if I'm about to post, if I'm about to promote something in my business, you know, if I'm about to react to something personally, I can call in that word and gauge whether or not I'm acting from that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so simple. I think just having one word is
so good.
Yeah. It's a really easy like navigational tool.
Yes.
And just a reminder to ourselves of like, oh yeah, this is what I've chosen to be important to me for this year at this time. And I'm just going to go with it. It's like making that commitment, getting on the path and like going in your chosen direction with continuity, with consistency. And I feel like there's really big payoffs when we do that, you know?
Yeah,
it's like this, I don't know, example that people talk about in yoga or in like Vedic philosophy. If you're like just going around and digging lots of small, shallow holes, you're never going to hit water. You know what I mean? So it's like you want to keep digging in the same spot and getting down and like getting to the water, getting to the gems, getting to the juice of like what is at the depths. So yeah, let's see what happens.
Let's see. And that's probably a nice little segue into the soulpreneur conversation.
So we wanted to do this as a topic because it's a question that always is asked of us, like, how did you start your own business? Or, you know, I know that you've mentored a lot of women that want to be coaches as well. And it's a common curiosity, I think. So we definitely have enough to say on this topic.
Well, why don't we start with sharing sort of our origin story when it comes to, you know, becoming soulpreneurs. So, Mans, why don't you share? Well, maybe I should share first. I should share my journey, story. So, as maybe some of you might know, if you've listened to me talk before, I did go to university. I just did an arts degree because I didn't really know what I wanted to do, much to the annoyance of my parents, because they wanted me to do a what's the other one?
Commerce,
exactly, proper degree. But I just fluffed around and wasted that time of my life, which is fine. But I did get a tertiary education for what it's worth, which I don't believe is that much. and then sort of just floated around working in retail and then finally started to find my feet in advertising. So I started off selling advertising for newspapers and ultimately ended up working for Fairfax Media in the digital side of their business and worked my way up to the senior management role in the WA office, which was basically when I started working for Fairfax, it was like a startup here in WA. So I did sort of hit like come in right at that sort of ground level. And, you know, I was extremely happy with my career in well into my 30s with this. You know, I was, you know, I had a a career that was scaling, and scaling is probably the wrong word, but progressing like really nicely. I kept moving up and getting promoted, and I was earning over six figures, and I owned multiple properties, and I had a lot of disposable income, and you know, I had a lot of social validation for the role that I had. Everything was looking really good, and so it wasn't on my radar to. I didn't feel wanting in any way. I was really happy. My career was fulfilling. There was nothing missing, as I know for a lot of people, there's something missing in their current career. Apart from, I mean, in the last few years of my job, I was definitely bored of it and tired of it. But it was probably when I started getting into the Czech stuff and started my own health journey, which did start in my early 30s, maybe even in my 30th year, maybe a year or two after. And when I started studying through the Czech Institute, and I studied for my own personal means initially, it was then that I started to see, I knew I was going to sneeze. It doesn't matter. Excuse me, everybody. It was only when I started to really work on my holistic health, which was physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. So I started to work on my spirituality and really start to contemplate what my core values were, and work on my physical health, and work on my mental health, and work on all of those things together, that I started to go, oh, wow, I don't really like walking around in stiletto heels every day. I am not fulfilled in this conversation with my staff about hitting KPIs, selling advertising packages. I'm not super fulfilled sitting in this fluorescently lit office, having to use a microwave to reheat my lunches. It wasn't until I started that journey that I really started to, and I guess coming back to sort of some of the things that we've talked about in previous episodes, and also even today alluded to with Dr. Martini, it wasn't until I started to really embody my values that I realized how out of alignment I was. And so when that started to happen, that was when I started to contemplate the concept of transitioning out of my comfortable corporate career and into my health coaching career. And I was encouraged by my mentor, Paul Check, who I had the fortune of studying with for two of the three sort of levels of the holistic lifestyle coaching course that I did. That transition period from I don't want to do this anymore to I'm going to start my own health coaching business, that was at least a 2-year period. And in that period, I was really uncomfortable because I had seen the obvious truth of, what was apparent in that I wasn't aligned, and I was doing something that was like not making me feel good anymore. But then there was this other potentiality over here of this new career, which at the time there was no health coaches, not a single health coach. Like if you said that you were a health coach, people would look at you like you had three heads, like it was not a thing. What is that? That's what people said to me. So it was really, really scary.
Let me just stop you for a second, because it's really interesting that, before you started the Czech Institute, you were on the surface level at least feeling really good. I could say like the ego identity level, you were killing it.
Yes.
However, your health was suffering.
Yes.
Which is why you were drawn to start the Czech Institute in the first place. So your body was telling you on some level, whether your mind knew it or not at the time.
Definitely.
Like, hey, we need to make a change, girl.
And then
you were expanded, like what we were talking about last episode. Then you went into this new kind of realm, were exposed to all of the possibilities in that Czech health world, and it sort of like took off the blinders of like, oh, there's so much more possibility. There's other options.
Yeah, and to be honest, I can thank my healing journey for the complete pivot and career change and all of the other amazing things that have happened from there, because it if it wasn't for all of those health issues and my, you know, eternal quest for answers in inverted commas, I never would have even contemplated that. You know, if you told me 5 years prior to me transitioning, oh, you're going to be a health coach in 5 years' time, I would have laughed in your face, you know. But yes, it was a really cool, scary and daunting time. And what I don't recommend, but what I did, and I'm sure, you know, we'll talk about this in more detail, but I literally jumped off a cliff. So I was working with a business coach. I'd completed my Czech studies over about 3 years, and she was, and I'd been working with her for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, and she, the idea of working with her, which I definitely recommend if anyone's transitioning or thinking of transitioning, was to get a strategy together to transition away from my corporate role. And her recommendation was start your business whilst you're working full time. You've got your buffer of your income, start to save some of it, because I wasn't saving money. I was just spending it. And then when you've built up enough clients that you can sustain yourself financially, and you've probably got a bit of savings, then you can resign and start your business. And
very sensible.
Very sensible. And I 100% agree with that advice. And I went, yeah, nah, I'm just going to resign. I literally just one day I just said, look, that's it. I don't have it in me anymore. And I resigned. And then, you know, 4 weeks later, I started my business. I had one client. I had one client who was, in fact, the first sort of cohort of clients that came to me were from the field that I was in, which was predominantly real estate based. So all of my clients were real estate agents for like the first 2 years, because that was my network. And we can talk about that later. But yeah, when I started on my first day of work in my office with one client, I literally sat at my desk bawling my eyes out, going, aww, what the fuck have I done? I was just paralyzed and just in absolute regret and remorse, just going, I've just made the biggest mistake of my life. Like, I've just left this, you know, very, you know, like we said, sort of conventionally on paper successful job to sit here not knowing what I'm doing with like zero money coming in, $100 a week or something coming in. And, you know, from there, many, many, many lessons were learned. But here I am sitting, and I know you've got 15 years, but here I am sitting 10 years into a health coaching career that is making over 6 figures a year now. So thankfully it all worked out. But, you know, it was definitely scary, and it was definitely there were a lot of scary and challenging times in the first 12 months. And things that I would definitely do differently that, you know, I would love to share. But before
what
we get
are the no, tell us, what would you do differently?
I think, you know, again, I mean, if I'm being repetitive, but if I had my time again, I would save. I mean, I was lucky because, full disclosure, my dad lent me money. So I'm lucky. I have a wealthy father, and I asked him if he could lend me $50,000, which is a lot of money. And I actually didn't use all of that money. But he did
yeah,
lend me that.
I need a new wardrobe for my new career.
I know. No, but I was like, okay, well, what would be, you know, a minimum wage sort of salary? You know, maybe I'll just ask my dad if he can spot me that. But I mean, most people don't have the luxury of asking that of their parents.
Well, what did you, so did you like pay yourself out of that 50 grand, or did you then invest that into building your business?
There was some of it that went on, you know, spending. I mean, my business is pretty low cost because I was running it from home. But there are business costs. Like, I was spending money on marketing. I was doing probably a little bit more of that stuff at the very beginning. But it was also just keeping, yeah, probably like 10 to 20 were spending on the business. And then the rest was surviving, like keeping my business afloat. And that you know, I guess whether it, you're going to borrow, but if you borrow, you're getting yourself into debt. And, you know, I think it's a wise idea to have something that will keep you going, because I had the luxury of that buffer, and what that buffer enabled me to do was stay. And, you know, I was able to build my business over that year without being so stressed and wound up and worried and having to go and get like a bridge job or something like that. And so because I had that buffer, I think that that enabled me to build slowly enough that into about a year I had a pretty good solid little base of clients. So I was starting to make fairly good money. Now, it did take me a good couple of years before I was starting to get up to, you know, a closer income level to what I was earning before. But I definitely think in whatever way is possible, ideally saving, that it's a good idea to have that, to have that buffer there.
Okay, my love, it's Amanda here. And instead of telling you about my yoga and Ayurveda offerings as per usual, if you want to learn about what I'm currently offering, go to yogaalchemy.com.au and you can see if there's one-on-ones available, group mentoring, teacher training, and all that stuff. What I'm really here to tell you about today is Karma Collab. So many of you are already familiar with this project that I started about 7 years ago in support of women and girls in rural India and also now here in Bali. Karma Collab is entering, as we go into this new year, its next evolution, its next phase. And part of that is a brand new jewelry collection where all of the proceeds go to providing education for girls and also providing support for mothers through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. So it's something that I'm really excited about. And there's lots of other ways that we can join forces and really empower ourselves through the act of giving and receiving. So if you want to learn more about Karma Collab, join our mailing list, go to karmacollab.org. The link will be in the show notes, of course, and come and follow us on Instagram. So much love is poured into this project, and I'm really excited to have you as part of our global network of women who support other women through real action and activism. Mwah.
Having
that buffer money means that your dynamic with your soul work can stay really clean, because as soon as we start to, and anyone that is, you know, like an artist will know this, as soon as you start charging for or having to earn money and pay your rent or pay your mortgage off your love, your passion, your art, it changes the dynamic with that thing. And so, yeah, if you can Definitely. Have that buffer, it means that you can come into a really healthy place with, you know, your clients or your customers or whatever it might be. Because if you really, really need the money, like, shit, I need to, you know, get this number of clients, or I need this person to book again so that I can pay my rent, that kind of sets up a weird
dynamic,
energetic,
yes,
like, you know, like neediness or dependency.
Yes.
And yeah, it can kind of warp what you're offering. And I guess it's more difficult to stay true and to stay authentic, to use your word of the year, when we're looking at like, okay, I really need this money to come in. And it might be, you know, more tempting to, instead of sharing or offering what's really authentic and what's really true, start going like, okay, this is going to sell, or this is going to,
yeah,
be more popular or something like that.
And the thing that I have seen over the years watching, especially because, like I said, when I started, there was barely any health coaches. So I was one of, I know there was another girl who was doing it quite soon after me. So it seemed like there was really two in Perth. It was me and her, and obviously now there's a gazillion. But watching lots of other girls, you know, trying to come up into that world, and watching, to be honest, a lot of them fail. I think what I saw happening was that that they didn't achieve maybe what they had expected to achieve, whether it was financially or client numbers or both, and that for whatever reason, which I assume was mostly financially, that they had to give up really quickly. So it was that they didn't have that luxury of time, and that's you know, that's what having some buffer underneath you enables you, because if you've got $1,000 and, you know, you need to start to earn a certain amount of money in a certain amount of time, after a while you're just going to say, it doesn't work, I can't do this. And if I'd looked at my numbers and counted my income from that first year, I certainly would have also made that deduction. But I needed to give it longer than that.
Were you worried when a lot of other people started coming in onto the scene?
Probably at times, but I have never really, I've tried not to spend too much time looking at what other people are doing. Like, even when I was developing my, luckily for when I did my health coaching, there wasn't really anyone to copy, because you know how ever like B School and all of those other sort of, you know, marketing initiatives will always say, like, go and have a look what your competitors are doing and like do a full like R&D on them. And, you know, I don't find that that is helpful personally. And even when I was like developing and working on my Luminous course, like my marketing people were like, you know, you need to go and see what the other things in the market are doing. And I just found that that wasn't helpful. I don't need to know what anyone else is doing, as long as, again, to come back to my word of the year, as long as I'm being authentic to myself. And I was being guided by what I had learned through the Czech Institute and also by my embodied personal experience. That was literally like my guidepost through the first few years of my career. And then, you know, pour all of those.
I think that quality of not being that interested in your competition, in quotes, competition, is a lot to do with your human design, actually, because I'm noticing a pattern. You're a manifester. I'm also a manifester. But I know three other women friends that are also manifestors, and I've heard all of them say at different points the same thing, whether it's you know, about writing a book or whatever. So, I mean, we're not talking about human design this episode specifically, but I do think knowing your human design and understanding it at least a little bit is really, really helpful when it comes to working for yourself and how to structure your work life.
And just quick footnote to that comment, if you are interested in human design, we interviewed an amazing girl called Amy Lee all about human design. So scroll back through the episodes, or we can link it here in the show note. It's a good episode.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think I really resonate with that as well. When I, not to jump ahead, but when I had my studio, I was following a lot of other yoga teachers and yoga studios in our city. And then pretty quickly I realized that this is entirely unhelpful. And I deliberately didn't follow anyone in our town for years. So I had no idea what anyone else was doing, which definitely shot me in the foot a couple of times. But I think the you know, like to weigh it up is definitely more helpful for me anyway, and by the sounds of it, you, to just, yeah, really stay like in your own lane, focus on what you want to offer, what's authentic to you, and, yeah, move from that place.
So we're going to go into lots of other things that I want to share about things that I feel have really helped me create, you know, pretty successful business. But let's hear your origin story, man. Yours is like even longer than mine. So Yeah. How did you get started? You've always been a solopreneur since you left school. You've always,
it's true,
blazed your own trail. You're a unicorn child.
I feel like I'm really lucky because I missed the corporate boat. Like I saw that ship sail and I thought I am going in another direction. But it happened very organically and actually not very deliberately at all. It was in my last year of uni that I also started a yoga teacher training. So I was doing those two things simultaneously. And then it just sort of happened that I was teaching more and more yoga and there was no real time or need for any other job or career. And I didn't feel any call. I mean, I was obsessed with yoga. If you think I'm obsessed now, you should have seen me back then. Like, I was obsessed. Not only like spending hours and like 3+ hours a day doing my personal yoga practice. I was like reading about yoga, studying about yoga, talking about yoga, teaching yoga, traveling for yoga. Like, my whole life was yoga.
So. I was the same level of obsessed about health and holistic health in like the Czech way. I was the same. So I think, you know, we'll pivot back to that because there's like clues that you can search for if you don't know what your passion is in your job.
Well, I think your passion can really take you a long way because when you're not earning, you know, an impressive amount of money and maybe you're not seeing the number of clients or students that you want to be, your passion for the thing can really carry you, I think, a long way.
Mm.
So, so I was just teaching yoga. I guess my real like solopreneurship when I kind of moved out of being a freelance yoga teacher and running my own business was 23 or 24. This is actually kind of a funny story. It made me remember when you were talking about your dad bankrolling you. So I had a weird like coinky dink experience. By the way, I heard such a great line the other day by David Life, who's a beautiful yoga teacher. And he said, if you think it's a coincidence, you're not paying attention. I love that. So I had a bike accident and I was just riding my bike down the street and basically someone opened their car door into the street. So, you know, they were like parallel parked on the side and they opened their door and a gust of wind. So like, you know, they opened it a crack, looked back, saw me riding and, you know, we're obviously going to wait. So I was like, going along, coming forward. We'd had that like moment of eye contact. And then a big gust of wind blew open their door and I went smashing into the interior of their car door and like over the car and onto the road, smash, boom, out completely. Luckily, and like if this was in a movie, it's pretty creepy, but luckily this happened literally 100 meters away from the entrance of an emergency room of a hospital. So I was very quickly helped by a beautiful nurse and she had just finished her shift and took me, I mean, I don't know if I was unconscious, but I was like really out of it. Maybe I'd just passed out for a minute on the road and then I came to. And anyway, she helped me in. I went to the ER. It was all very bad. Fast forward, maybe 6 to 12 months later, completely, you know, moved on with my life. I didn't have any serious injuries apart from like losing a lot of teeth and things like that. But all of a sudden I got a check in the mail. Actually, I was in India at the time and my mum called me because it came to their house. And she was like, Amanda, you got a check in the mail. $30,000. I was like, what? Are you kidding? And basically it was like a third party payout insurance thing that I never claimed for. It just completely came out of nowhere. And I was like, well, go and take it to the bank and see if it works. Like, we were just bewildered. Like, is this real? And anyway, she went and put it in my account, and then the money came, and I was like, what the hell? $30,000. And I didn't do anything with that money for a while. And then fast forward again, a friend of mine came to me with an idea, a fellow yoga teacher, and she was like, let's do a pop-up. It was when like pop-ups are a big thing, pop-up restaurants, pop-up shops, pop-up everything. Like, let's do a yoga pop-up in the city. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And we were going to do 3 months. She'd found this amazing space. And so we went to see it, fell in love with it, got really excited about the idea of doing this thing. And then fast forward again, I don't want to give like every detail because it'd be too long and boring. But basically she got pregnant and decided like, hey, no, this isn't the right time for me to start something new. And then at the same time, the real estate agent said, actually, no, we can't offer you a 3 month pop-up. You have to sign a proper commercial lease. And I think it was 2 years. And I had already like started to get really excited about this whole idea. And I was like, 2 years, that's such a long time. Like I've got India trips to do. And I didn't really, I wasn't really in the mindset of starting like a big project like that. And I had no idea what I was doing business-wise. I had no like experience in terms of, or even like really a plan to start a yoga studio, but the space was amazing. The landlord was amazing. The area was super cool. And it was just like feeling really exciting. And so I decided, yeah, okay. I had a retreat planned in Costa Rica. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell the landlord, no, sorry, 2 years, it's too much. I can't commit to that right now. And I'm going away for 6 weeks right now anyway. So sorry, but, you know, bye. So I had that conversation with them, sent that email, and then she messaged back and said, no worries. I'm happy to hold the space for you until you come back from Costa Rica. So you can just start the lease then. And like, we'd love to have you, sort of thing. And I was like, okay. So I went to Costa Rica, and within that 6 weeks did all of the planning to do the fit out of the studio, like do the website, do the timetable, like all of the things. It was like doing it all from this jungle in Costa Rica. And then I came back to Perth, I think like on a Friday, and then we opened, we did the fit out that weekend and opened on Monday. And I remember the first five people that I had in that class, I will never forget them. And it was 6 a.m. on Monday morning, and there was five people in this little cute yoga studio in August. It was raining. And that was the start. And it was so, it was so cool. Like I just, yeah, so just to tie it up, I used that 30 grand from the insurance random payout thing to start the studio. Because, yeah, that was, I guess, in the back of my mind, like, oh, actually, this opportunity has come up. And for once in my life, I can actually, like, do it. I have the resources to actually do something. So that was that. And yeah, then it started. And like you said, it was very slow. I think that's a big thing for people to know and just, I guess, be comforted by, that the first year of any business is really, well, I don't know, any business. Of course, there's some that are like amazing from day one and you have a big, you know, launch. But I think for 99% of businesses, the first year is really slow and really hard. And there was a lot of classes of me rocking up to teach one person or no people, and, you know, just all of those questions that come up, like, is this right? Am I doing the right thing? Like, what's not clicking? And all of, like, the crazy things that come with running a small business. Like, I just remember so many times we'd have, like, a big rain and the roof would cave in and there would be, like, oh my God, hole in the ceiling and rain coming in on people doing, like, it was like, don't practice in that spot. That's where the rain comes in. Like, just all those sort of things of, like, running a small business that you just, like, oh, you're just, like, you know, like, putting it together with your, like, little bits and pieces.
Yes.
But there's a lot. I really, really loved it.
Yes. Yeah, I loved that space. That was a beautiful space. But I think, yeah, there's a lot of, and I think for everybody, no matter where you're coming from, well, you know, maybe there are ways to circumvent this, but there is a lot of improvisation in, you know,
totally
in the, you know, for me, I was going to say before, I feel sorry for the first 100 clients that I worked on, because I feel like it was trial and error. I didn't have my methodologies down. I didn't have all my systems in place. I didn't, you know, it took me time. I think it took me like a good 2 years to really evolve into, you know, some like structured systems and things that worked and, you know, packages for my clients based on, you know, and the number of sessions I needed and all of that. None of that. I didn't have any of that. And I was learning. And I guess that's another really important point. I get asked a lot, you know, how did you start? I get a lot of, you know, more predominantly young girls that will say, you know, I'm just going to do another degree and I'm going to do this after that and then I'm going to do this course and that course. And it's like, you have to start at some point and it's not going to be perfect when you start. It's
so many things you can only learn through doing it.
Yes. And that doesn't mean, we've both said that we, you know, we had some planning in place and we had some financial support behind us, both of us. So we didn't just decide on a whim to do something and hope for the best. But
no, you know, and I had been teaching yoga for 5 years by the time I started the studio. And I was like, you know, teaching all over the city, running around like a headless chicken. Like that was only going to last a matter of time, you know, like that wasn't sustainable. Something eventually needed to change, and I was, you know, lucky and I guess happy that I didn't wait until I burnt out before I made a change and started my own little studio and was just able to teach in one place and not run around anymore. But I think that's a thing that a lot of yoga teachers go through, that initiation by fire of teaching all over the place, teaching too many classes, because, you know, you don't get paid much per class, so you need to do a lot to make up your income. And yeah, I think but of course things have changed now completely, because now you've got the whole online space. And God, I feel sorry for the studios that had to very quickly pivot and turn their whole studio to be online at the beginning of COVID.
And I guess now, like, you know, I mean, I guess there are some studios that are just a brick and mortar, but I feel like a lot of studios now have to offer both.
Well, you have to, yeah. And back in the day, I mean, not to make this so yoga studio centric, but similar to you, when I opened my little boutique yoga studio, it was the only yoga studio in the city centre. And then within the first like 4 or 5 years of being there, there was an explosion and I was surrounded by big fat, like, you know, what is it called, like chain studios that could house, you know, 80 students at a time. And it was also very scary for me. I was like, oh my God. But it comes back to that authenticity thing of, you know what, I don't want to be teaching 80 people a yoga class. I love our like intimate, sweet space and how like genuine and soulful it is. And so, you know, I was clear on that was what I wanted to do and to stick with it. But yeah, it was threatening in some way and financially scary. But again, it was like, you know what, the people that want to go to the 80 person class are going to go, and the people that want to come to the 20 person, 15 person class are going to come here, you know, and everyone finds what they need at that time. And maybe people go to both and, you know, they want things on different days, and that's cool. But I think I was lucky as well, and kind of, yeah, in the same vein as being like the first yoga studio, I was then quite early as well to go online. So way, way before all COVID stuff, I was already offering online classes and courses, and before things were even, I mean, when I first put out my online course, I had to really explain what it was to have a digital product. And it was so difficult to even get the digital infrastructure of like how to send them the file and how are they going to download it and all of this sort of stuff. Like people would email me and be like, can you just send me a DVD? I was like, no, like it was so foreign. It was so new and like very clunky in the beginning. But I think that too, like being on the pulse of like, okay, what's my next step? How do I want to evolve? Not getting to the point of like, okay, fuck, I have to do something. I mean, obviously when COVID happened, none of us saw that coming. So, you know, there was no way to be prepared. But I think if you're really staying close to your intuition and close to your authenticity, you will be guided to what is your best next step? What is your next evolution? And when you're up, when you're working for yourself, you're always going to be changing and evolving what that looks like, because that's the nature of ourselves, you know, to be changing and evolving. And if you're being guided by your soul to guide your business, then those two things are going to be like inseparable, you know? Okay, what are your highs and lows of working for yourself?
Well, I think, you know, to give the highs and lows, like pros and cons elements as well, I think like highs/pros, freedom. You know, I honestly do not think that I could. I was having this conversation with one of my clients last week, and she's self-employed, and you know, she's semi-retired, and she was like, oh, I couldn't work, I'd rather die. And I was thinking, I'm the same. Like, I don't think, having worked for myself for 10 years, that I could ever go back to being beholden to someone else's, you know, expectations and regulations by, you know, having to go into an office, having to work at certain hours, you know. I get to decide the hours that I work. I get to decide, you know, what days I work. I have ultimate, you know, freedom. I get to decide if I want to take time off. I don't have to ask anybody. You know, it's just that level of freedom, which I designed that. Part of the reason that I transitioned away from my corporate career was because I wanted the freedom to be able to have the time and space to exercise, meditate, cook and prepare all of my own food, shop for, you know, all organic food, you know, have a Tai Chi practice, which I did at the time. Like, do all of those things took time, right? And I didn't have time in my corporate job because I was working. So that freedom of time, I think, is the biggest high, the biggest pro. Mm-hmm. What are the other pros? Just like fulfillment, you know, like I think most soulpreneurs, because we're talking about the definition of soulpreneur being, you know, entrepreneurs that are doing, have an entrepreneurship that is soul driven. You know, like my job is so fulfilling. I'm helping people every single day. So, you know, there's so many moments where I just sit with my clients and I go, oh, that is so fulfilling. I'm so grateful for these experiences and these relationships, and that I've been able to create that, you know. And then that dovetails into my third and probably, you know, that's probably enough highs or pros, but is my purpose. So, you know, I'm so grateful that I feel, and I'm sure you're the same, and I know you are, but that I feel that my life has been purposeful and it's been meaningful because I've been able to create and shape. I've been able to create and shape. My son's yelling at me. Anyway, I've been able to create and shape this career for myself that is fulfilling at a soul level and that is purposeful and that makes a difference in the world. I mean, what could be better than that? I have a legacy. Even if I didn't have my child, I believe that I've left a legacy, and I don't feel like I would be able to reflect back upon my time working as the head of advertising and sales in, you know, WA for the digital classifieds. You know, like it doesn't have that same impact. It doesn't have that same sense of purpose and fulfillment. So those are the highs. Let's hear your highs, and then I'll talk through my cons and yours too. What are yours?
Well, it's interesting that you say, you know, the sense of fulfillment, because I think that, you know, similar to what I was saying about passion, the fulfillment is so regenerative in our energy, and that's what gives that quality of not really, you know, working. Like, working. Of course, when you're it's a different definition of work. I don't have any like negative connotations or baggage around the idea of work, but I think for most people, the idea of work means doing something that you don't want to do and it being draining, you know, on your energy. But when you're doing something that is soul aligned, it is, the act itself is fulfilling and actually gives you energy. Like, I know that you're the same as me when you get off a one-on-one or you finish up with a client, it's like you're buzzing. It's like you just get so much energy from it. And it's, yeah, it's just so fulfilling. So I have to agree with that one, of course. I agree with everything you said, of course. but highs, I guess for me, yeah, also freedom in the way of being able to shift and change. And this kind of goes back to human design. But under my like kind of umbrella of being a yoga teacher, I've done so many different things and I'm continuing to change what those things are. And, you know, being able to follow my curiosity and my love for Ayurveda and bringing that into my offerings, and then doing Flow Festival, and then doing now Karma Collab, which is kind of my main project, even more than teaching yoga. I actually haven't taught a physical yoga class since more than 2 years. So I've even thought, like, maybe I'm not going to teach for like 10 years. It's totally possible. But yeah, being able to pivot, it's a big word right now, but yeah, being able to change, because like I was saying before, I think that's the nature of our soul and our growth, is to want to change and evolve. Maybe not for everybody, but for me, yeah, being able to exercise all of these different different kind of platforms and ways of like using my creativity, but they all feel very aligned to me. Like, you know, Flow Festival is something that also, like, the studio had a life force of its own and really was birthed out of something very synchronistic and small and organic, and then just blew up into this huge thing. And that too, I'm like having to grieve a little bit. Like, maybe Flow Festival is never going to happen again. We haven't done it now for 2 years, and we have no plans or expectations on when the next one might be. It would have been this January, right now. So yeah, it's like letting things have their natural lifespan, I feel like, is really a beautiful gift of being able to work for myself, not having to do things beyond their expiration date. Like when I eventually sold the studio and I was happy to like pass it on and for it to continue and continue having a life of its own, like beyond me, that made me really, really happy. But I knew it was time for me to go. And yeah, it was, I guess, if I had done that in partnership with another person, it would have been much more difficult to leave when I wanted to and to follow that soul instinct of like, no, even though it didn't make any logistical sense at the time, like, okay, finally, after like 5 years of busting your ass, the studio is doing better than ever. You finally, you know, like got it cranking and now you're going to leave? Like now you're going to throw in the towel, so to speak. And I was like, yeah, because I know in my heart it's time to change and it might not make sense on paper, but it was green lights all the way and I had no doubt that it was the right move. So, yeah, I guess in a nutshell, freedom as well, same as you. But, yeah, being able to really stay close to my soul instincts. I feel like I've jabbered on quite a bit. Why don't you tell us a low?
Low. So
there's plenty of lows.
Yeah, there's many lows. I would say lows/cons. The number one for me is unpredictable income. And that is something that, you know, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. You're always the voice of calm, trust, intuition, and rationale. And I'm always like, it's over. My business is closing and dying. So for whatever reason.
I wonder how many messages I've received from you of like, it's a sinking ship.
It's, you know, the
and then the next day you're like, oh no, it's fine.
I know. And that's the thing that I think if anyone is going to be, you know, a solopreneur or wants to be a solopreneur, you know, running your own business means that it ebbs and flows. So, you know, I have had months and years where it is game, or particularly months, like I've had months where I've made like $20,000 in the month. Like it's just been like I'd love to make that every month. But you know, I've had months where I've made maybe $2,000 in the month or something, you know. And it is hard, not only for, you know, planning and, you know, paying mortgages and different financial commitments and things like that, but it's also, no matter how many years I do this, that, you know, even though that trust muscle is really strong, there is a part of me that does panic when it ebbs, when the tide goes out and when I don't have a lot of clients. And, you know, I think that it is more challenging for some people to have to deal with that, but there is always that element of ebbing and flowing in a business. So I think that's something that you know, any solopreneur needs to get used to and sort of you know, embrace. Come to terms with, embrace, exactly. And then
let's just talk to this for a second, because okay. I think embracing the inconsistent income is a big like paradigm shift that we have to make if we're going to be a solopreneur.
Hello, it's Sarah here. And I'm just briefly interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit more about what I offer. So I've worked with literally hundreds and hundreds of women, helping them transform their health, hormones, fertility, and more. And I absolutely love working one-on-one with women because we're all uniquely different. So if you're interested in learning more about coaching with me, or if you're ready to book an initial consultation, you'll find the link in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, so let's wrap this baby up and tie it in a bow. Sarah, do you have any recommendations for somebody wanting to jump off the cliff?
Yes, I think I have two. One is a local Perth girl and one is somewhere in the States. And there's probably lots of other ones that maybe you're familiar with now. But the OG sort of online business school that helps you to create your own sort of solopreneur-based business is called B School. And I know that both you and I have done it, although I didn't complete it, but yeah. I did a lot of the modules. And even though it's the oldest and it's the most original, I think it's still really good. And you have a lifetime access to all of the online content and millions of people have done it.
And updated content.
Updated, exactly. So I think that B School is a really good place to start. Even if you're doing a bricks and mortar, it's sort of designed for people that are wanting to create stuff in the online space. But I do think that it has applications across.
I think it's applicable for any business. Yes. I completely agree with this recommendation.
And then
Marie Forleo. You can just binge her on YouTube and learn so much.
Yeah, she's got so much free content. So, and then the other one is this local girl, and I think I'm going to do her marketing mastermind this year. So hopefully if I tell you all about it, you don't, like, get my spot. But anyway, her name is Ellie Swift, and she has she calls it the Swift Marketing Mastermind. It's quite expensive, so, yeah, it won't be for everyone. It's probably more for people that might have started their business, but they are wanting – support around the sales and marketing component, because that's what she's really good at. And for my online course, that's really, what I need support around. But yeah, she's really good. She's helped so many people get into $1 million businesses, and yeah, she's lovely. So and her content is obviously good, because she's always sharing really great testimonials from her clients. So they're my two recies. What are yours?
I just my only recommendation is B School. What you said.
Great.
And awesome. Things that we've already mentioned in the past, like doing the work around money, doing the work around self-worth. I think those are the two biggest things when it comes to, working for the vision.
And actually, D. Martini, again, just to full circle this back. Conversation, he has some really good stuff around helping you clarify career stuff around values. So, he's always good too. And I think that's a wrap.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the Elevate podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review so we can keep bringing these conversations to you all.